Welcome to DeFi Expectations. Today we have on Oranges from the Shared State community. He is a contributor whose primary focus is governance and is responsible for SIP16, the VESGT strategy aimed at improving tokenomics and helping with formalizing governance processes at Shared Stake. How are you doing today, Oranges?
Yeah, good, man. How are you?
Doing fantastic. Just another exciting day in DeFi. It's like it moves pretty fast. You don't stop and look around once in a while, you can miss it.
Yeah, so true. So true.
Why don't you start by telling us a little bit about yourself and how you got into crypto and DeFi?
So I'm fortunate enough to know someone completely anonymous, obviously, who is a bit of an OG in Ethereum. So he's been involved in the space for quite a long time and has kind of kept me in the loop of what's kind of going on. And I think when cryptocurrencies as a whole had the narrative of digital money, I wasn't really too sold on it, or not enough to really invest and get interested. But when things shifted and DeFi became a reality, even in its early days, it showed a real use case for blockchain that I hadn't really seen before. And I'm someone who's been interested in traditional finance and has worked in traditional finance in the past. So I've had some good experience in that area, and I could just see how much more efficient, if you like, DeFi is making the financial world. And yeah, just got hooked from there, really.
What were some of the first protocols or projects you tried out in the space?
I think the first thing I did was create a Maker Vault, and I did it only with a couple of ETH, because I'm thinking of today's prices, but a couple of grand, and created a vault, and it cost me $60 in gas, and I was like, my God, this is expensive. And then I obviously only, with a couple of grand with Maker, because the collateral ratio is relatively high, you obviously couldn't borrow too much. So I quickly realized that in this space, you've got to go in with deep pockets pretty quickly, you know, if you want to be capital efficient and make the transaction costs minimal compared to what you're doing. So that was my first dip, and just went from there, really.
And how did you get acquainted with Shared Stake? How did you discover their project originally?
So you know what, I follow Crypto Yield Info. I think he's fantastic, and I think he has some really good insights and thoughts in the space. And he tweeted about Shared Stake. So, and I think he was quite early into the project, and I've been looking at him to kind of see, well, what's the next thing he kind of talks about. And then when I found out it was an ETH2 protocol, I was really quite interested, because I think there's a lot of demand to stake ETH, but there's a lot of people who don't have enough ETH to stake for their own validators. And from a technical standpoint, it's actually quite intimidating for someone to set up their own validator and manage that. So I think I've always thought when ETH staking came about that there would be a big space for this, really. And that is the kind of protocol that a lot of the small guys could take advantage of.
Absolutely. Would you say that that's probably the best value statement about Shared Stake, the fact that you don't need 32 ETH to stake on the platform, or would you say that there's something else that makes it valuable?
I think that's the best kind of overall statement for all the ETH staking protocols out there. You know, every Lido, all these kind of guys, that's their USP. It's not even their USP, really, because it's not unique. All the staking protocols, the benefit is you don't have to have 32 ETH and someone else will do it for you. So I think for SGT, the real value is not only obviously to be able to stake for the small guys, but it's the fact that you can earn off that stake. So your V2 you can put into pools, you can stake it, single-sided staking, and earn SGT rewards as well. And there aren't many protocols that really do that.
Now, I have a question real quick. So I know I've heard of Lido or Lido. What are some of the other competitors, I suppose, that Shared Stake has in this same field?
Rocket Pool seems to be an interesting one. that's one that I've noticed is getting quite a bit of traction. That and Lido, I think, are the main two that I'm aware of, to be honest, other than Shared Stake. Obviously, you've got like Coinbase and Kraken and all these other centralized platforms offering staking services as well. And I think actually Cream do a staking service as well, if I'm not mistaken.
Do they offer a similar like APY?
The centralized exchanges don't. I think their APY is pretty poor, from my understanding, but it's easy. You know, my mum could go and stake ETH2 through Coinbase if she really wanted to, kind of thing. Whereas not, if you make the effort to get into the DeFi ecosystem, you know, you've got a MetaMask account, etc., you can get rewarded further by using a decentralized staking platform.
How hard do you think that is? Like, you know, if somebody was new to actually trying to move off of like a decentralized exchange into DeFi, how hard of a transition do you think that would be for someone, especially with no help?
I think it's actually quite difficult. I think it's quite a big barrier. The weird thing is, once you get in and you do it and you've done a couple of transactions, it becomes so easy and so intuitive after a while that you kind of think, well, anyone can do this. But in reality, I remember when I first did it, I went through it with a friend to do it. When you're depositing real money into a protocol that you've never heard of, and you just click a couple of buttons through an extension in MetaMask, you know, I remember my biggest fear going, am I going to send this money to the wrong place? Am I going to lose this? Mm-hmm. Is this real? Is it not a scam? Is it a legitimate site with a community behind it? And when you come in fresh off the bat, there's no way of really knowing that. Like, I could go on, you know, if I've never touched DeFi before, I go to Rocket Pool. How do I know that's not just some shop put up in someone's basement to grab cash off people like me, you know? And then the UX is generally quite poor as an industry as a whole. The UX isn't great. Like, there are a lot of really, really good projects out there, don't get me wrong, but a lot of them, I mean, the amount of times I have to go into Discord to ask questions to just understand what certain things mean. I think a good example is Alchemix, in the sense that fantastic project, but as soon as you go onto their site, it says transmute DAI. Like, what the hell does transmute DAI mean? You know, like, I still don't know what that means. I think it's to do with the way their stablecoin works. But do you see what I mean? There's a lot of, it's not very user friendly, basically.
Fry was helping me kind of like get a little bit deeper. I remember when he was showing me stuff like Curve, and I'm like, oh my god, this looks like something from the 90s.
Yeah, if that. Yeah, like Curve is incredibly is a fantastic protocol, and I'm a huge believer in Curve. But yeah, the UX really is something. You know, not only, you know, you deposit and you think you're done, but then you've got to deposit it in the gauge, your LP tokens in a gauge to get the Curve rewards. And then even then you've got to claim, I think I remember claiming 0.01 Curve to update my boost so I could get my 2.5 times for my V-Curve. Like, it's not easy. It's not user friendly.
All the gas fees every direction too. And you were talking earlier about how there's a lot of different staking solutions involving ETH, and which one you choose is often kind of based on your level of education. You know, I mean, take for instance Coinbase. That's obviously going to be the easiest one. But then once you get into DeFi, it's kind of like you see the ad and it's almost like a joke. You know, me and Robin were joking about this. It's like, reserve your position in line to maybe earn 5 to 6% on your ETH, you know what I mean? Right? And it's like, or you don't have to wait in line and you can come to Shared Stake and do that right now. You know, it's just what you're comfortable with and what you're able to do. And it's like getting that level of engagement and getting people to choose that option that gives you the higher interest rate. It isn't just about, you know, just saying, well, look, our interest rates are better. You also have to deal with the education of your user and like their comfort level with dealing with a type of DeFi platform that they haven't used before. To that point, I guess I would ask, what do you think are some of the benefits that maybe Shared Stake might offer versus some of the other competitors in the space like Lido or Rocket Pool?
Well, I think if we take Lido first, I think I think Lido has, I think they've got a 10% fee on rewards. I might be wrong there, but I think it's 10%. Shared stakes, 5%. So that's half the fee. So that's a quick win, I'd say. I've been thinking about Lido a lot. I think Lido is, it's kind of like the blue chip for ETH2 staking outside of centralized exchanges. It's very polished. It's very well finished. It looks very nice. It's easy to understand. And protocols like Shared Stake, they're more like your, at least at the moment, and I think this will change, but they're more like your local restaurant or your local business. It's probably a better word, where you want to support them, and they're a bit smaller and they're growing and they're more exciting, you know? And I think one of the big benefits of Shared Stake is you can earn SGT, you can earn the Shared Stake governance token by depositing your SGT or your VETH2 in the protocol to earn extra yields. Whereas with Lido, you just own the token and you get paid your rewards just like with any other ETH2 staking. But unless you want to put it in Curve, then there's no way of getting extra yield off your ETH tokens there. Oh, and even then, you can do that with ETH. You don't even need to stake in Lido. You can just stake ETH into the Lido pool on Curve.
Could you explain for the listeners what the fee is? Like, so you said for Shared Stake, it's 5%. Over at Lido, it's 10%.
Sure. So when you stake ETH, you basically get a part of the ETH issuance from securing the network, and that is paid in ETH, and I think it's about 10% roughly per annum at the moment. And the staking protocols where you stake your ETH, for example, Lido, Shared Stake, or Rocket Pool, they will take a management fee to stake for you, to set up the validators, to take a little bit of profit, etc. So Lido charges 10%. So if you make one ETH a year from your 10%, so say you deposit 10 ETH and you make one ETH a year from your rewards, Lido will take 0.1 ETH off you, whereas Shared Stake will take 0.05.
Gotcha. And that is being paid originally from the Ethereum Foundation, is that correct?
Yeah, exactly. So it's at the moment, obviously, we've got proof of work. So every time a block is created, ETH is paid to miners along with transaction fees. With proof of stake, ETH is deposited in the staking contract to secure the network. And basically, you keep your validators up. And if your validator isn't up to check transactions, make sure everything goes through okay, then you will lose some of your ETH you've staked as a penalty. So that's why it's proof of stake, if you like. And by keeping the your validators running and securing the network and approving the transactions and keeping it secure, you get paid ETH as a reward for that. And that's where the APY comes from.
I want to ask some questions about the SGT token itself and maybe some future improvements, SIPs on the way in terms of tokenomics. I know that you were very involved in the VE SGT proposal, SIP 16. Can you tell us a little bit about SIP 16? What inspired you to make such efforts like writing up the SIP? Which has now been approved, and how you think VESGT might improve tokenomics with Shared Stake?
Sure. So, I mean, VESGT is taking a leaf out of Curve's book. Curve is renowned for one of the best tokenomic models in the space, at least in my opinion. And having VESGT, i.e. being able to lock your SGT for boosted rewards to your existing staked liquidity, it's just a really powerful tokenomic model that not only drives loyalty to the protocol, it drives higher prices for the token because you're locking up supply as well. A lot of protocols suffer from the kind of farm and dump mentality where you get the token, you stake in whatever you want to stake in and you get paid in their token. But, you know, if you don't have anything really to keep you interested in the project, you just sell the token for something else, and you just get very depressed token prices, which doesn't help the community. It doesn't help the DAO's treasury, because a lot of these protocols, the vast majority of the treasury is nominated in their own token. So I think the reason I wanted to get so involved was because I can see a lot of potential in shared stake. I think, as I've just said, kind of the VESGT kind of model is very powerful. And I think it's something they could benefit a lot from. And it's just something I wanted to be a part of. I think something about within the crypto community, everyone wants to contribute and to be involved and to help and to share their knowledge and expertise. And I just saw this as an opportunity for me to really try and help a relatively new protocol.
Yeah, and it's a really exciting proposal, like to kind of spell out exactly how this might work. So let's say you have 10,000 ETH staked on the platform. My understanding is the idea, it would be like, let's say you locked $1,500 worth of SGT up for a year, right? You would be getting essentially double the APY on your staked 10 grand of ETH. Is that correct? Is that a good way of understanding it?
Yeah, so there's three tiers of how to get your boost. So say you've got, it's all, if we take it all in dollar terms, so you've got 10 grand worth of ETH staked, you know, ETH2 staked in the ETH2 staking contract, and therefore in SGT's ETH2 contract. If you lock your SGT for 3 months, you have to deposit 70% of your liquidity value state, so 7 grand in this example, to get your full boost. If you lock it for 6 months, it's 50%. And if you lock it for 12 months, it's 15%. So the whole point of that and that kind of sharp drop is to encourage people to lock it for more. There's no point locking for 3 months. You're not really getting any benefit there. Well, the protocol isn't really getting any benefit there. So by encouraging users to lock for a longer period of time, you lock more SGT for a longer period, and you get loyalty to the platform as well. And users have a fixed stake in the protocol.
Yeah, and I like it too, because it balances in a way, you know, in my opinion, I mean, I don't know this, you're probably more a financial person who could say this, but I would suspect that the whales who are coming into these projects are probably dumping the tokens, because that's what makes the most economical sense to them at that time. It's like they're making a good enough APY. They don't know if this token will be worth something or not. So if they're not invested in the project to that degree, they're just going to dump it. But what's nice about this is if you don't have $20,000, you only have 10, you know, you can come up with another 1500, you can have that same power essentially as somebody with that liquidity, because you're actually staking and showing a loyalty to the product, which is kind of like another way of what you just said. But I guess what I really liked about it versus other protocols is, in my view, is it kind of creates a way for people with less amounts of liquidity to still be able to compete in a way with whales. And I think overall, this structure and this switch to this type of model would lock up large amounts of SGT and would theoretically, you know, benefit token price over time.
Yeah, completely. And, you know, say you only had 10 grand, you know, you could deposit 8.5 grand of ETH into the staking contract and buy 1.5 grand worth of SGT, mm-hmm. Lock it, job done. And hopefully your SGT goes up in value and you've got a really healthy ETH reward. And actually you get rewarded in SGT, so you can have more SGT, and is kind of a win-win for everyone. If the whales want to lock up for 3 months, let them do so. They've got the capital to put in 70%, and that'll boost the SGT price as well if they're paying 70% of whatever kind of amount they're depositing.
Absolutely. And is there anything else that you wanted to share that's currently on the horizon for SGT? It could be upcoming SIPs, it could be governance actions. Is there anything in particular that has you excited right now?
Yeah, there are a couple of things. So compounding yields, compounding yield vaults is something that's coming, I've heard. And that's really interesting. Like, who doesn't like compounding interest? It saves on gas fees. I think Badger has done something similar, but they only did 50% of rewards compounding and 50% is claimable. I don't know why they didn't just do it all compounding, to be honest. Mm-hmm. So that's really cool. And that's going to be really good for the project, I think. I think we're getting a dashboard soon, if I'm not mistaken, where we can actually see the rewards we're making from our staked ETH. I think that's a really interesting upgrade for the platform because it provides visibility. And I think visibility is so important just generally. And, you know, I've staked, for example, we've shared stake my ETH to the ETH2. And I'm getting, I must be getting 10% or something like that. But until ETH2 goes live, I have no idea how much I'm making. And what I'm making for my investment. Yes. Whereas having a dashboard to show you this in real time and show, oh, I've made 0.1 ETH or I've made, you know, half an ETH in 6 months or whatever it may be, gives a lot of credibility to the platform, answers a lot of questions that the community might have and gives transparency, which I think is really good.
Absolutely, completely agree. And also, Oranges, I do recognize and respect you as a fellow Anon. Can you maybe tell us a little bit about Oranges in real life, as much as you're comfortable, and maybe how your interests or experience in real life correlate with your contributions to Shared Stake?
Oh, okay. So I'm male. I live in the United Kingdom. I'll give that much in terms of location. You probably tell from the accent anyway there. I'm a bit of a gamer. So I enjoy my esports. I enjoy games. I think a lot of people in this space do. I ride a motorbike. I play golf. And I'm interested in finance. They're probably the key headlines, I guess. I studied financial economics at uni. I then went and worked for an oil brokerage and an options brokerage and a couple of other financial related firms in London after I graduated. So I've got quite a good background in financial services. I've moved out of that since, but it was just, I wanted a life really. So I moved out of that since, but I've always kept the interest in economics and I've always followed the traditional markets. So I found DeFi quite a natural move. I found it quite easy to grasp a lot of the aspects of DeFi because of that background, I guess. But it's also made me super bullish on it because, I mean, a good example, a couple of months ago, I wanted to sell some shares in a company I had to put it into DeFi. And I had this decision, I made this decision on Saturday, but I had to wait till Monday to actually do the trade. Whereas in blockchain, it's 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And then when I did the trade, I then had to wait till the end of the day for the funds to clear by the clearinghouse to confirm that the trade was valid and everything. And then it took a couple of days for the money to leave the brokerage account and go to my bank account so I could then transfer it over. And what in DeFi would have been a couple of minutes, you know, go to my desk, find what I want to do and do it. Kind of job, it turned into a 4-day kind of saga, really.
Mm-hmm. And what are some of the obstacles? Because I mean, generally, I definitely agree with you. I mean, that's why I'm here. I love DeFi. I would definitely choose it over the conventional banking system. But like you talk about, I mean, fellow ETH maxi or ETH fanboy, however you want to call it. You know, there are problems like gas fees. They're becoming more maintained. You know, there's talks of layers two solutions, but more specifically, there's a lot of problems effective governance faces. And I think that what's interesting about you and like the SIPs you brought to the table, I feel like they're very pointed at fixing some of those problems. So maybe if you could share just some of the obstacles effective governance faces in DeFi just inherently. And maybe feel free to use examples from Shared Stake or any DeFi project you've been associated with.
Sure. So decentralized finance is all about decentralization. And I think one of the big challenges for these protocols is they all want to be, quite rightly, and need to be decentralized. But it's very hard to run a business if you're completely and utterly decentralized. And what I mean by that is if every single decision, full stop, has to go through to a SIP or to a governance proposal, you're just going to move so slowly, you're not going to get anywhere. I guess a real world example, someone needs to order some pens for the shared stake office, and that's got to go to a vote. You know, you're never going to get anywhere. So I think the real challenge is getting full decentralization, but then obviously the team behind each protocol has to be completely transparent in what's happening and give token holders vote on everything from a strategic point of view. You know, what emissions are, where the protocol's moving, what it's targeting, you know, what kind of users it's targeting, how it's getting more users, etc. But little things like, you know, who works on a particular contract or whether menial things can just be got on with. And I think a lot of these protocols just struggle a little bit with transparency. And I think it's probably the biggest bugbear for the communities. For example, if we come back to that dashboard I was talking about earlier for shared stake, that'll be a huge benefit even just for governance, because you're going to get people going, how much ETH am I earning? And you're going to get people maybe selling their ETH too for ETH, because people get really impatient in DeFi. It's instant yield all the time at the moment. And if you've got to wait 6 months for yield, for promised yield, people get itchy feet. So having that visibility kind of gives people confidence in how the protocol's running, in the governance of it and everything else.
Oh yeah, it's definitely a balancing act for sure too, because, you know, like you were talking about, you have that issue of voter fatigue, you know, if people are just getting involved in every little thing, you know, to where they're just, you know, voting practically just, okay, fine, just do it. Okay. Then they stop getting engaged, you know, versus, you know, you don't want an authoritarian regime that's of course just deciding everything for itself either, because then of course that's not DeFi. So it's definitely a balancing act. One of the things that I think really helps with visible governance, in my opinion, is a forum. I had mentioned to you on this show that we'd be giving our community a first look at the new Shared Stake Governance Forum, or SGF as I'm calling it currently for now. So we'll go ahead and get that pulled up on the screen so we can take a look at it and talk about it a little bit. So now, not only is this the first look at our new forum, but it is live. You can now visit forum.sharedstake.org, sign up and become an active member of our community governance forum. Now, Oranges, when I originally asked you about whether or not you'd be interested in helping with the forum, you were pretty supportive. Can you tell me a little bit about what you think the role of a forum is in governance and how this forum might benefit governance at Shared Stake?
Sure. So I think essentially it just provides visibility, right? It gives a structured method of allowing the community to debate up and coming proposals. So at the moment, SIP 16, for example, we had a Discord channel to talk about that, but it wasn't very structured. It's easy to miss people's points as the conversation gets going. Whereas with a forum, if we had a forum at that time, it just makes life so much easier, because you can post all the information, initial post, you can get people to discuss it below. It's just a much more formalized and more visible form of discussion. And that only benefits SIPs and any governance votes going forward, really.
Absolutely. And are there any specific roadblocks you think that maybe Shared Stake has had managing governance in a forum that maybe this might help with?
Yeah, I think it just creates a ton of visibility for the community. I think that's the key thing here. It gives people a clear visual place to discuss and to see all the different points to get responses from the team and to move things forward. And then even just when it comes to the structure of governance. So when you come to doing the SIPs, for example, instead of it just being a big wall of text, which no one's going to read or it's complicated, you can structure the whole proposal quite nicely with the aid of a forum, because you know you can link the forum to the discussion. Mm-hmm. So, you know, SIP 21 as discussed, link to forum. So then people can go and look at the whole debate if they want to really get deep in the weeds with how that proposal came about and the pros and cons to it and all the discussion that's been had.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, one recent example I'm thinking of, some we had posted some announcements about SIP 15 and 16 being posted, and a community member just had kind of pointed out to us, oh, how come in the announcement there aren't links to the SIPs? And, you know, in all fairness, if you really aren't here every day, you could miss things that happen, right? But like, you know, from our point of view, it's like, we've had time, we've discussed this, like you didn't know where the link was to the SIP. Like, this has been discussed extensively. We discussed it over a few days. And I think what's really nice about, you know, a forum, I guess, versus Discord is Discords are great. They're so effective for engaging with the community and really getting some real building done. But what's hard is if you try to go back to where like the discussion began, like where's the original link to this SIP, to this proposal, whatever, sometimes it's a little more obscured. It's a little harder. You have to dig back and it's not quite as intuitive. Whereas, you know, with a forum, you can always link back to SIP 16 and you can literally see all the discussion that happened around there. You can have a vote in the forum. You can have a link to the snapshot that took place. It really does help having that visibility so people don't get lost on what's happening. Because, you know, if you're not 24/7 DeFi, you could look at a protocol like a week later and think that, you know, the team just went and made a bunch of decisions on their own, whereas, you know, the community was involved and that's not how it happened. So I guess that's one way I see it.
Yeah, for sure. Like the amount of messages that can go on a Discord channel is just incredible. You know, the amount of times I've logged off late in the night and then the next morning I come in, there's like 150 messages in the Discord. And especially with larger protocols as well, like good luck trying to keep up to date with what's happening on, say, the Wi-Fi Discord. Oh yeah. Like, there's so much stuff going on all the time. There's so many people messaging in that Discord that you're never going to stay up to date with what's going on. And you're not reading through 150 messages of most of it's probably, how do I deposit into this? How do I do that? To find arguments for and against a particular proposal.
I think that this is a big thing too, that, you know, it's another gap that needs to be bridged, because a lot of people who are relatively new just to cryptocurrency in general probably have no idea that this even exists, that like there's the decentralized aspect that literally has everyone voting on what's happening with essentially what they're used to as being companies essentially. So, you know, you're not really used to really having any kind of a vote, even if you own stock in something like that, you know. You probably don't really actively vote with the stock that you have on a regular basis. But with this, you have really an active way to participate in what's usually a pretty small community all in all, and that you can get involved and that it's not really that hard if you need to or want to, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Like, since when can you go and speak to the CEO of a company?
Exactly.
through Discord? Or when can you vote? Unless you've got a crazy amount of, you know, you're on the board, or you're a significant shareholder, which will require millions or even billions in some cases of money, then when are you ever getting any say with how any centralized company works? That just doesn't exist. And in DeFi, you can just go into any protocol's Discord, and then you can literally find the founder and go, hi.
Yep.
You know, whether it will respond to you.
I've done it more than once. And it works surprisingly fast sometimes.
Yeah. And then people who actually educate you on the project sometimes too, like they'll take the time to actually talk to you. I mean, it's a very unique community, and you know, it's wonderful that you can just reach out to people directly through forums and Discords. I think it's awesome.
Yeah, it's a really powerful benefit, I think.
Yeah. So, by the way, have you created any memes for our contest yet, Oranges?
I I haven't yet. I do love a good meme, but I'm not the most creative person. I'll give it a go though. I'll see what I can come up with.
I was about to start last night. It was like almost 2 a.m. I'm like, yeah, not tonight. I'll try this again later.
I'm looking forward to seeing what the community comes up with though. And I'm intrigued to see how much creativity there is, because I think the easy answer is just to do a steak, because that's already a bit of a meme, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm interested to see what comes up.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll definitely include a link to the contest in the description as well. And we'll be looking for more ways to get that out there to the community so we can get lots of participation. And with that being said, let's go ahead and switch gears and talk about Uma, the DeFi project, not the actress. Now, ShareStake has performed a couple airdrops with mixed response from the community. There has been some talk around the campfire about the possibility of a Uma-style airdrop. Can you tell me a bit about Uma and how involving their mechanics in some way for an airdrop would work and might be more effective than previous SGT airdrops?
Yeah, so Uma has done an airdrop themselves recently, but they've taken on a really good take, which is they're basically given people options. So instead of just dropping tokens to people based off whatever algorithm they decide, they've given people who they feel qualified, people who are active in voting with various protocols or being involved in certain projects, they give them options and they let those options be worth more based off certain KPIs that they deem as valuable for their protocol. So I think the key one for them is increasing the total value locked. So if the total value locked increases to, I think it was 2 billion, I'm guessing there, I think it's around that, then the option's worth the maximum it's possibly worth, which is a couple of grand, I think. So it's a really cool little mechanic because it isn't just an aimless airdrop. It encourages people to partake in the protocol to be able to get the maximum airdrop that is being given, rather than just because you voted on a Uniswap governance proposal 6 months ago, you're getting this token and therefore you got no interest in that protocol and you're just going to dump it straight away.
Interesting. Yeah, because I had heard about it and, you know, just frankly, like there was a couple things that I kind of identified from the airdrops, which, you know, in my view of airdrops is this: somebody's giving you something free, you know, to try a product, you should have a positive attitude about it. You know what I mean? Like that's just generally like, and you shouldn't expect anything because it's DeFi, right? You know, but I think there were some mechanics about the performance of the shared stake airdrops that could have been a little bit better. And I think that maybe with a little bit more sophistication that might be offered by something like an Uma integration, it could kind of help balance out things like, you know, making sure whales don't absorb the whole airdrop, so it's not beneficial for the entire community. You know, shared stake obviously appeals to the user who has less than 32 ETH. So probably the airdrop should also appeal to that person and not just get swallowed up by a whale. So definitely, like, my view is either no more airdrops, but if we see more in the future, and can do one with really strong mechanics, like what might be afforded through, you know, Uma, I think that's super positive. Is there anything specific you think it might offer that might be a little bit more pointed or beneficial to shared stake specifically?
Well, I think all airdrops, they need to be done to benefit the protocol, right? So you might do an airdrop initially to, in effect, a marketing campaign. We're here. Hi guys, you know, get some buzz, get some people to take note of your protocol. But where you can't do too many, because then, well, what's the point? What's the DAO getting out of it? Mm-hmm. Other than just, you know, it's arguably better to use that airdrop to incentivize your contracts and your staking contracts to encourage more people to lock or to use your protocol, right? So I think the UMA style options is, you know, if Shared Stake does do another airdrop in the future, I think that's definitely a good way of going about it. You know, if you've done two airdrops, you know, like the standard, then doing a third standard airdrop, I don't really see what value that will bring. But doing something where you can attach it to key metrics that is important for Shared Stake, for example, say increasing total value locked, mm-hmm. Or whatever else is important at the time, then maybe, you know, a certain amount of ETH, or a certain amount of validators, for example, set up on the Beacon chain. That could be quite an interesting proposition.
So we'll go ahead and shift gears then, start wrapping up. And I'll start by asking about other projects you follow in the space. I know you had mentioned NFTX before. Are you involved with NFTs or any projects in the space there you want to talk about?
Oh, is this where I can pump my bags?
Of course. It's your chance, Oranges. Pump those.
Yeah. The NFTX is a really cool project. I'm not a huge NFT holder personally. I think there are so many NFT projects out there, and it's not guaranteed which ones will survive the test of time, other than say CryptoPunks, because they're the OGs really. And I don't want to invest 30, 40, 50 ETH in an NFT right now. But NFTX is a fantastic project because it basically indexes NFTs. NFTs by nature, they're non-fungible. So they're very illiquid generally, and the price of them is very subjective. Whereas if you can index NFTs, then you can start to provide some base level liquidity for NFTs, which I think is really important. NFTX, as far as I'm aware, are the only guys doing this. And as NFTs as a space grows and gets bigger, more popular, indexes for NFTs are going to get bigger. I think that's the general use case for NFTX. And I think as a result, if NFTs grow, which they will, NFTX can only grow. I'm generally a big investor in a lot of the blue chips, with a couple of smaller projects on the side, right? So Uniswap, AV, Compound, Badger. I'm a big fan of Badger. I think all the boomers buying will slowly start to buy Bitcoin, and all this institutional investment into Bitcoin over the last 6 months and going forward is one thing. But when people start to realize about decentralized finance, and when institutions start to get involved in decentralized finance, when they realize they can make a yield off their digital gold, then a protocol such as Badger, I think, is going to do really well. You know, and they're building a lot of stuff, and they've done their Badger Bridge recently to allow people to bridge Bitcoin over to Ethereum and to decentralized finance, where they would take a cut and obviously go straight into their vaults. So I think they're in a really good spot for when the boomers start to pay attention to decentralized finance. It's just a case of when, I think, not if. So obviously Shared Stake is a really good ETH2 staking protocol. Big fan, because it helps the little guy, and ETH2 staking is huge, just generally. And then I've got little ones like ArchDAO. That's a really cool little project for MEV, and MEV is going to be a big thing with ETH2, and Shroom, because Shroom's a cool little project looking at NFTs in the gaming space.
Interesting. Yeah, NFTX for sure is one that I've kind of had an eye on for a while, even though I haven't made any direct investments with them. I remember Alex Gosman was on the Gabriel Haynes show talking about the exchange being like a 1-inch for NFTs, or like the Amazon of NFTs. And I was just like, wow, like what a marketing statement if they can really blow that up and own that for all that it's worth. And then of course with Badger, you know, obviously Badger is a great project. I still believe, always have believed, that what Badger did for Bitcoin is theoretically what shared stake can do for ETH, or what it can mean for, I suppose, ETH staking rewards. So I'm definitely interested to see what ways that we can continue to grow the project together and look for ways to emulate other big boys in the scene. I haven't heard about the other one, though. I think you said Shroom's, right?
Yeah, Shroom.
Shroom. Okay. Not Shroom. Shroom. Okay.
Yeah.
I got a little too excited there.
Yeah, awesome. They've got a little mushroom as their picture, so I'm not surprised. They're now NiftyX. You might have heard of NiftyX. They've had a bit of a rebrand. But they're quite a cool little project. They're focusing on like a game exchange. I mean, so picture this, right? You got a Steam account, you're playing Counter-Strike, right? Or whatever, maybe Dota is more popular in this space. And you get a drop with a skin, right? And that might be worth $5. If you can take that skin and deposit it into a decentralized exchange and rent it out and earn a yield on it, or use it as collateral, like, that's a really powerful idea, and it takes NFTs to the next level. And NiftyX are looking at integrating NFTs into gaming. And I think that's, as a gamer, that I think that's really exciting.
Yeah, I'm really excited about Star Atlas. We had them on, what, last week, Robin? They were pretty
just fun. About to talk about, yeah.
Yeah, what did you think of that project, Robin?
Oh, I'm super stoked on it. I'm very excited.
Yeah, so basically Star Atlas, they're built on Solana chain, right? Is that correct, Rob?
Yep.
Yeah, and basically they're just going to be like one of the first like official 3D games. Like, they're building it on Unreal Engine and everything to utilize like blockchain, NFTs, like your ships are NFTs, you have like your crew and stuff is managed on the blockchain. It's just a really fascinating project. And what's really cool about it is if you go there, like versus like other games and other gamey type platforms, it just doesn't have the same level of sophistication and like rendering and graphics that like this has. It's definitely like, you know, a very big project with a huge scope of what they can do for it. You know, I almost like thought of it almost like No Man's Sky, you know, if you've heard of that game.
Yes,
before.
Yeah.
But it looks like they have the team resources to make it happen. So we're definitely following that project and see what happens with it. It's pretty exciting.
Nice. It's amazing what people are doing in this space across all chains.
Oh yeah. It's fascinating for sure.
Except for BSC.
Yes, I'm not a huge Binance person either. I haven't used it too much. I got an airdrop on Binance because of my Badger involvement, and I had to like have somebody, like I had to meet somebody on Twitter and have them send me some BNB so I could collect it and then send me money back. Like, but I didn't get ripped off. It was super cool.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So it was
I wanted to buy some stuff on Binance like 2 weeks ago, but I didn't have any Binance. So I was just like, I went on one of the Telegrams and I was begging for some because it was like 2 a.m. Because if I wanted to buy it, there's a 10-day clearing period through Binance. And that's if people even can get an account at this point.
Really?
Oh yeah, it's just horrible. So I was like, somebody quick, send me some Binance coin.
Jeez. Yeah, the standard site you can't access in the US. So it's like, I tried to use it for the first time. It's like, after how many steps for me to finally claim this airdrop, will it even be worth it? And fortunately, someone came on and just gave me some BNB to simplify the process. So, yeah, it was
like
pretty
here,
cool.
No issue at all. Just as if you're buying ETH.
Yeah, I want to say it was like at the end of last year, I remember hearing that Binance had to essentially close off use for US residents, and then they created Binance.us. So we have our own site essentially, but there's so many coins that are not available on there. It sucked.
Right. Yeah, because they're a separate entity. You got a new CEO for that.
Yeah, recently. And then of course, like I said, there's a 10-day clearing period when you actually like purchase something until you can move your funds away. So it's like, if you find something you want to do, that day, you're just totally screwed.
Right. Yeah. I mean, this is just an advert for decentralized finance, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Essentially. I mean, and that's kind of what keeps me away from other chains anyway. I mean, you know, Robin, I know you're big on VeChain and all that. And that makes sense, but it's just like anytime I have to go to a different network and manage something else, it's like, it has to really be profitable for me to be able to divide my focus on it at this time, because there's just so much happening on the Ethereum network, like on that blockchain. Like, there's no time or reason really to focus on anything else, you know? I mean, at least that's how I feel. But and you just kind of have to go where your passion is. It's just too difficult to be like, okay, now I need to get more BNB, which means I have to sign into this account and send money to my wallet here, and then it's just too much hassle sometimes to have to deal with all that.
Yeah, especially with layer twos coming online, right? Like AV Polygon, Curve Polygon, Curve Phantom, and then obviously Spirit Swap, I think's out now on Phantom. But there's so many new opportunities within the Ethereum ecosystem and the chain support, the chains around that. They don't really need to leave.
Just again, centering around yourself, obviously I'm a fellow Anon. Basically, what is just the reason for your choice to be anonymous, and what are some of the benefits anonymity offers when working in the space from your point of view?
That's a good question. I don't see, I think there's real value in being anonymous when it comes to your wallet address. Because your wallet address is in effect your bank account, open to the world for anyone to see any transaction you've done, to see what you've got, you know, see how much you're worth, you know, all of that. And I don't think that's necessarily a good thing. You know, like if you knew my wallet address and you could just go on and see everything I'm doing, everything I own, you know, I don't think that's healthy. And, you know, it can be quite, I guess you could, worst case scenario, if you're a big enough whale, especially, you can get extorted. So I think being anonymous is really important for that. When it comes to, you know, smaller things like just partaking in governance or being involved in a protocol, it's more that being anonymous is the norm. You know, like I'm known as Oranges within this space, and that's fine by me. I'm very happy to just be known as Oranges, and for you to be known as DeFi Fry, and for everyone else to be known for whatever their name does. It more comes down to the security with relating to your wallet that I think is where anonymity is particularly important.
Yeah, that's a great point of view about it, for sure. I think 0x Maki just kept it really simple. He was doing an interview with the Defiant Camilla Russo, and she asked about anonymity, and he was very short. He just said it's simpler. And I think she took it almost kind of like he didn't answer the question, but like it is simpler. Like it's really just the basic answer to it. It's a simpler experience.
It's a really good point. I mean, even this little things, like nowadays in today's society, you know, you have to hire a certain amount of women. You can't be against age. You can't be against sexuality or anything like this, which is all good things. But if you're anonymous, none of that it doesn't even need to be considered, because you're not, you have no preconceptions about someone. You're literally going, what can this person offer me? Do they add value to what I want? And it's as simple as that. And you get rid of everything else. You know, any first impression where you might get a bias one way or another, you know, if a really hot 18-year-old wants to work for you as your PA, you're going to be biased versus a 75-year-old fat man, right? whereas if you're anonymous and it's just, you know, person A and person B, you're going to pick the person who's skilled and best for the job, right? So it does make life a lot simpler as well. I agree with that.
Yeah, that's a really great perspective too. I was filling out some type of a request form, and it was asking like, oh, you know, is Shared Stake like an open community, you know, basically like welcoming of all different, you know, colors, genders, so on and so forth. I'm like, we're so accepting. We hire anonymous people.
Yeah, that's our only requirement is you have to be a cartoon character.
Yeah, exactly.
Awesome. So, Oranges, how can others in the space get into contact with you?
Twitter's probably the best place to get hold of me. So if you want to contact me via Twitter, you can. His name's Oranges. It's at ETH Oranges. Otherwise, I'm in the Shared Stake Discord quite a lot. I hang around there quite a bit. So yeah, get in touch.
Awesome. Sounds great. I think we're all good then. Robin, do you have anything else to ask?
No, that's it. Thank you for coming on. Appreciate it.
Cheers, guys. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.